soldiers of Israel have been true to the cause of our king. The rebellion of Absalom has been crushed. Absalom, the betrayer, is dead. He's been given a burial of dishonor. Once again, peace shall reign throughout all Israel. Long live David, King of Israel.
Well, Uncle Dan, it sounds like you have another David story for us from the Bible.
Right, Aunt Sue. This time, our story is adapted from chapters 18, 19, and 24 of 2 Samuel.
I remember that in the last story, King David, after learning of his son Absalom's plan to overthrow him as king, fled from Jerusalem, the capital city.
Yes, Aunt Sue. And then Absalom took over the throne and led a rebel army out to capture his father David and destroy his forces. But Absalom's men were badly defeated, and Absalom himself lost his life.
It's easy to imagine how David, as a father and king, must have suffered in this experience.
As our story unfolds today, we see that his troubles are almost never-ending ones. I'm going to call this chapter,
A Victory Turned to Mourning.
As David sits between the two gates of the city of Mahanaim, waiting for the news of the battle, the thought uppermost in his mind is not of regaining his crown and the lost kingdom, nor for the safety of his own life, but rather he is thinking of his son, Absalom. Recalling the tragic events of the last years, the father's heart is filled with love and pity for the young prince. The day wears slowly away. A watchman on the city wall above the gates is keeping constant lookout toward the battlefield. Suddenly, he calls out,
Your Majesty! Your Majesty! I see a man running alone! He is approaching the city gate!
If he's alone, he must be a messenger with news of the battle.
Here comes another runner! He too is alone!
Perhaps he also brings tidings.
Your Majesty! From up here, the first man runs like Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok.
He's a good man and brings good tidings.
Long live his majesty, the king.
Greetings, Ahimaaz. What tidings do you bear?
All is well, your majesty. Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord, the king.
Tell me, Ahimaaz, is it well with the young man, Absalom?
Your majesty, when Joab sent your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I do not know
Wait a moment. Here comes another runner.
Your majesty, I bring good tidings to my lord, the king.
Yes, yes. What is it?
The Lord has delivered you this day from the power of all who rose up against
yes,
you.
Yes, I've already heard about that. But can you tell me, messenger, is it well with the young man, Absalom?
Your majesty, may the enemies of my lord, the king, and all who rise up against you for evil, be like that young man.
He's dead. Oh, my son. My son, Absalom. Oh, would God I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son.
With bowed head and aching heart, David makes his slow way up to the chamber over the city gate, weeping as he goes. He weeps not only for the loss of his son, but for the sake of his own wrong course of action years before, that in the chain of events is now responsible for this terrible tragedy. But while David weeps and laments, another scene is taking place. From the woods and fields, the victorious army of Israel, with glad shouts of triumph, approach the city. God has given the victory. The rebellion is over, and the nation has been spared a long and costly civil war. But as the victorious men of war enter the city gate, their shouts of joy die away, their banners droop in their hands, and with downcast gaze they break ranks and advance more like those who've suffered defeat than like conquerors. For their king is not waiting to bid them welcome. The victory of the day is fast turning to mourning.
Oh, the king can't do this to these men. They've been true to him, fighting for him. They died for him. They won for him. Where is he? Where is the king? Does anybody know?
The king, sir?
Yes, the king.
Well, he's up there, sir, in the chamber above this gate, weeping and mourning for Absalom.
Now, out of my way. I'll get to the king. Out of my way!
My son, Absalom. My son. Would God that I had died in his stead. Oh, my son.
Your Majesty, what is the meaning of this? This is no way to treat your soldiers. They won a victory today for you. And here you are wailing and lamenting. You are king, sire. I'm but a rude, gruff soldier. Yet even I realize that God has given Israel reason for triumph and gladness this day. The greatest rebellion ever known in Israel has been crushed. But you, sire? Turning this victory into a mourning for Absalom, the very one whose crimes caused the war and the shedding of the blood of thousands of brave men. You brought shame on your soldiers, members of your court, who this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters. It appears you hate your friends and love your enemies. Certainly you have made it clear that you have no regard for your princes or your servants. For I perceive that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead, then you would be pleased. Now, therefore, O king, if you would do your duty, you will arise, go out, speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now.
David was quick to recognize the justice of Joab's cutting rebuke, as well as the wisdom of his counsel. Responding quickly, the king went down to the gate, and with words of courage and commendation, greeted his brave soldiers as they marched past him. But the overthrow of Absalom did not at once bring peace to the kingdom.
David.
Yes, Bathsheba?
When are we going to return to Jerusalem?
Evidently, you don't like it here in Mahanaim.
Well, it isn't home.
I wish I could answer your question, Bathsheba, but I can't. I don't know when we'll return to Jerusalem, if ever.
You have the right to, don't you? You are king of all Israel.
That, my dear, is what I'm not sure of. So large a part of the nation had joined Absalom in revolt that I feel I cannot return to Jerusalem without an invitation from all the tribes. So far, there's been no indication that this will happen, at least not in the near future.
In the meantime, Israel has no king?
That's right. Israel has no king.
Unrest, confusion, indecision prevailed everywhere. The 10 tribes of Israel were the first to voice among themselves a sad state of this disorganization.
The death of Absalom has left the land desolate, disorganized. Israel is full of different groups, all at odds with one another. Some are still strong adherents of Absalom, others are for David. Others are willing to have almost anyone as king.
But David is strong, and he has strong support. Why doesn't he take things in hand and take over the throne, force people to accept him as king?
Because he is not that kind of a man. David did not seek the crown in the first place. He was chosen of God and now has no desire to return to the kingship unless the people of Israel and Judah want him back.
Well, I think David is a great king. He saved us from out of the hand of the Philistines. He saved us from all our enemies and has widened our borders until now we extend from the great sea even under the great river Euphrates. I think it is about time our leaders do something about setting David upon the throne of Jerusalem and again making him our king. Long live King David!
While many were anxious to see David reinstated as king, still others were slow to accept him. Yet David was skillful in dealing with men, and finally he again reigned upon the throne over all Israel. All during his life, David enjoyed precious experiences of the love of God, and he had been richly endowed with God's Spirit. And yet, worldly success and honor so weakened the character of David that he was repeatedly overcome by the tempter.
In their dealings with heathen nations around them, David and his people were led to follow their national customs. As pride and self-confidence increased, the Israelites were not content to do the will of God. With a view of extending his conquests among foreign nations, David determined to increase his army by requiring military service from all who were of proper age. To do this, it became necessary to take a census of the population. Holy Scripture says,
"And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel."
Now David summoned Joab to come before him.
"You sent for me, Your Majesty."
"Yes, General. Do you remember, Joab, the days when we hid from Saul in the cave of Adullam?"
"Oh, indeed I do, sire. In those days, we had a band of about 600 men. Nevertheless, under your leadership, we were a terror to the Philistines, or anyone else for that matter."
"Today, the nation's army numbers into the hundreds of thousands. Joab, we must now think about expanding the borders of Israel. To do this, I am determined that we shall have the largest and best-trained army in all the world. General, I've decided to take a census of our people so that we can draw into the armed services all men who are old enough to serve."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"So I want you to take the commanders of our armed forces and go throughout all Israel to number the men of military age."
"Number all of Israel, sire?"
"Yes."
"Your Majesty, I'm always ready to do the bidding of my king, but such a request is out of harmony with God's will for Israel. The people themselves will object, I feel certain. And besides, you may very well incur the displeasure of heaven upon you and the entire nation as well. It is the Lord who wins battles for us, whether it be by many or few."
"General Joab, it is not your prerogative to debate the wisdom of your king. Go now, number Israel from Dan to Beersheba, and bring me a report that I may know their number."
"Very well, Your Majesty."
So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. The task was so great, it took nearly 10 months to complete the census. The numbering was not finished, however, before David was convicted of his wrongdoing in the sight of heaven. Self-condemned, he at last sought God in prayer.
"O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. I have sinned greatly in what I've done. But now, O Lord, I pray thee, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. Lord, hear my voice. Let thine ears be attentive."
The next morning,
"Your Majesty, the prophet Gad awaits in the antechamber to see you. He says it is an urgent matter."
"I will see him, scribe."
"The king will see you. You may enter."
"Long live the king."
"Oh, good morning, Your Grace. Have you come with a message for me?"
"Oh, king, last night the Lord spoke to me, saying, 'Go and say to David, because thou hast presumed to number Israel, thus says the Lord, three things I offer you. Choose one of them, that I may do it unto you.'"
"The Lord has given me the choice of one of three punishments for my sin? Say on, Your Grace."
"Thus says the Lord, shall 3 years of famine come to you in your land? Or will you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Or shall there be 3 days of pestilence in your land? Now consider, O king, and decide what answer I shall return to him who sent me."
"The Lord has spoken. What can I say in defense of my sin? I'm in great distress. O prophet of God, say unto the Lord, 'Let us fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercy is great, but let me not fall into the hand of man.'"
So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning until the appointed time. And there died of the people from Dan to Beersheba 70,000 men. The scourge had not yet entered the city of Jerusalem when David lifted up his eyes and saw an angel of the Lord standing between earth and heaven, and in his hand a drawn sword stretched out over Jerusalem. David and the elders, who were clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. Then did David plead with his God.
Oh, my God, hear me now, I pray thee. Was it not I who gave command to number the people? It is I who have sinned and done very wickedly. But these sheep, my people, what have they done? Let thy hand, I pray thee, O Lord, my God, be against me and against my father's house. But let not the plague be upon thy people.
The prophet Gad was again sent to David with a message.
Go up, rear an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite.
And David went up the mountain and there built an altar to the Lord, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and called upon the Lord. And the Lord answered him from heaven by fire upon the altar of burnt offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. The spot upon which the angel halted and the altar was erected was from then on regarded as holy ground. It was upon this very mountain that Abraham, centuries before, had erected an altar upon which to offer his son Isaac. It was here that Solomon, David's son, later built the sacred temple.
I love the Lord, because he hath heard my voice and my supplications. Therefore I will call upon him as long as I live. The Lord hath chastened me sore, but he hath not given me over unto death. I was brought low, and he helped me. Return unto thy rest, O my soul, for the Lord hath dealt bountifully with thee.
Aunt Sue and I have something very special for our second story for today. And this story, instead of being told by Aunt Sue or myself, is going to be told by a boy who was 5 years old when he recorded it for your story hour. Now, perhaps we should tell you that Ricky is not going to read the story, but rather he's going to tell it completely from memory. For Ricky learned it by heart by listening to it over and over again from a long play record. The name of the story is
The Hermit and the King. There's an old story that I love to tell about a dirty old man who used to live in a dirty old house away up on the side of a hill in a country far, far away. He was called a hermit because he didn't like to be with people. He just liked to live all by himself. He ate as little food as he could so that he wouldn't have to work any more than he just had to. He never swept his house, he never washed his clothes, and he never pulled the weeds from his garden. He just slept and slept and sat in the sunshine nearly all the time. Down in the valley there was a beautiful city where the good king of the country lived, but the dirty old hermit was content to live all by himself. And only went to the city once in a while when it was necessary to sell a bundle of wood in order to buy something to eat. One day the dirty old man was sitting in the sunshine among the weeds when he heard a horse coming up the path toward his house, cloppity-cloppity-cloppity-clop, and he looked, and it was the king riding on his horse up the hill. He came closer and closer. He tied his horse to a post and walked towards the dirty old house. Then he stood there looking over the valley to the majestic mountains on the other side. What a beautiful sight, said the king. Aren't those mountains beautiful? The dirty old hermit heard the king speaking and turned to look at the mountains, and the king saw him. Friend hermit, he said, may I come again to look at these majestic hills from your garden? The view from here is so grand, it makes me feel like a better man. But the poor old hermit was so ashamed of his dirty old house and his dirty old garden that he couldn't speak, and he hung his head in shame. And while he sat there wondering what to do, the king went away. But he will come again, said the hermit to himself. I must get ready for him. So he cleared away the weeds and swept the path of his house and repaired his old broken stool and placed it in front of his house and waited for the king to come again. And one day he heard a horse coming up the hill again, cloppity-cloppity-cloppity-clop, and he looked, and it was the king riding on his horse up the hill. He came closer and closer and tied his horse to a post and then walked up, and he came and sat on the stool and gazed over the valley to the beautiful mountains. And the king said, thank you so much, friend Hermit. I just love to come here. May I have a glass of water to drink? He didn't dare to tell the king that his cup was dirty and his bucket was empty and the spring was muddy and overgrown with weeds. What could he do? In shame, he ran to the spring to clean his cup. But when he got back, the king had gone away. But he will come again, said the hermit to himself. He said he would, and I must get ready for him. So he cleaned the spring and cleaned his cup. Then he put a table beside the little stool in front of his house and brought fresh water in his bucket every day and kept it on the table and waited for the king to come again. And one day he heard a horse coming up the hill again, cloppity-cloppity-cloppity-clop. And he looked, and it was the king riding on his horse up the hill. He came closer and closer. He tied his horse and walked towards the dirty old house. And he came and sat on the stool and drank a cup of lovely cool water. And the king said, thank you so much, friend Hermit, he said. I just love to come here and enjoy this beautiful view. It was so good of you to have lovely cool water already. I'm so tired and hungry today. Could I please have a little bread to eat? Poor old hermit. He had nothing to eat but a few half-rotten grapes and a dry crust or two of bread. He didn't dare to offer any to the king. And while he sat there wondering what to do, the king went away. But he will come again, said the hermit to himself. He said he would, and I must get ready for him. So he went into the forest and cut wood and sold it in the city and bought cornmeal and baked corn cakes every day. Then he watered his garden and weeded his turnips and waited for the king to come again. And one day he heard a horse coming up the hill again, cloppity-cloppity-cloppity-clop. And it was the king, and he came and sat on the stool and drank the water and ate the corn cakes. And the king said, thank you so much, friend Hermit. I just love to come here and enjoy this beautiful view. It is so good of you to let me come and rest in your garden and refresh myself with your food and your water. Then he said, friend Hermit, I'd like to sleep here tonight so that I can see the sun rise in the morning. Sleep here? Poor old hermit, he didn't dare to tell the king that he had no bed, and that he slept on some old bags on the floor. In shame, he hung his head and went inside his house, wondering what he could do. And while he was there, the king went away. But he will come again, said the hermit to himself. He said he would, and I must get ready for him. So he went into the forest and cut some nice poles and made a nice bed. Then he cut some more poles and made a nice veranda in front of his house. Then he watered. Then he sold some more wood and bought a nice mattress and a nice blanket. Then he noticed how dirty his house was, so he swept his house and washed his windows. Then he noticed how dirty his clothes were, so he sold some more wood and bought some nice new clothes. And every day he swept his house and weeded his garden and drew fresh water and baked corn cakes and bathed himself and dressed in his nice new clothes and waited for the king to come again. And one day he heard a horse coming up the hill again, cloppity-cloppity-cloppity-clop. And it was the king, and the old hermit went to meet him, and the king came and sat on the stool and drank the the water and ate some corn cakes and watched the sunset behind the beautiful mountains. And the king said, thank you so much, friend Hermit, he said. I just love to come here and enjoy this beautiful view. It is so good of you to let me come and rest in your garden and refresh myself with your food and your water and to sit here and look over the valley at those great, tall, strong mountains. God must be so good to be able to make mountains like that. And he is so good to let us see him. It makes me want to be a better man and a better king. Then the king slept on a nice new bed and stayed with the hermit all night and watched the sunrise in the morning. And the old hermit was so happy because the king ate with him and talked with him and stayed with him. And the people didn't call him Dirty Old Hermit anymore. They called him the Friend of the King.